Started at the Turaway, Northwest London, Monday, 8th Shavat, 10th of January, Rabbi Yisrael Fine, The Unique Torah of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Part 2. This week's Torah has been sponsored, Lila Nishmas, Moraz Martel, Bas, Rav Meir Rafoel, Olea Shalom.
Thank you very much for inviting me back for Part 2. There could be Part 3, Part 4, Part 5. And any number of parts that you like, because 36 years ago there was the Patira, the catastrophic loss to Klal Yisrael of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in America. But since in those 36 years, his magnum opus, his main work of Emes Liakov Al HaTorah, has taken on a new role in Klal Yisrael. His popularity has zoomed. And as I said last time, it's more than a Perush al HaTorah, it's a collection of mini essays. Each one has got a yesod which we can take a very important lesson from. The first thing I want to talk about is his approach to marriage. He had two marriages. His approach to marriage, you can say, was taken from his own experience. He had two marriages, first of all, in 1919, at the age of 28, as we know in the Litvische Welt, you very often got married later. First of all, there should be not Rechaim or Savoro, they should learn Torah first. So at the age of 28, he married his first wife, who was his wife for 38 years, his Rebbetzin Itza Etel, who was the daughter of the Mashgiach of Slobodka, Rebbe Hirsch Heller. They had six children, well-known children, including Reb Shmuel and Reb Yomim. And then his second marriage, 4 years after he became an Alman, after he lost his first Rebbetzin, in 1958 he married his second wife, Rebbetzin Chana Urman, who was with him until his patira in 1958. They were very contrasting shidduchim. His first Rebbetzin Itza Etel, who was the daughter of, as I said, the Mashgiach of Slobodka, Rebbe Hirsch Heller, and he knew the family very, very well. He knew his shver, he knew the home, and he describes the shidduch that she came into the room. She said to him, "Do you want a cup of tea?" And he said, "Yes, please," and that was it. That was the shidduch. He said, "Yes, please." He tasted the tea and had enough sugar in it or whatever. But anyway, he was happy with the cup of tea. And along with the cup of tea came his wife. But it was a serious point. He said, "I didn't need any more. I didn't need any more than the cup of tea." Why? Because he said, "I knew the family inside out. She was a product of a family that I knew. I knew exactly what I was getting." That was his words. "I knew exactly what I was getting." And by contrast, his second marriage, Rebbetzin Chana Urman from Toronto, there he was attracted to his future Rebbetzin. He knew the son used to come, her son from her first marriage used to come with shilas. He's very impressed by the shilas that he brought, that the son brought from his mother. And she ran a boarding house, charged next to nothing for all the Choshever guests that came along. It was in Toronto, the first port of call for visiting Rosh Yeshiva. She honored Talmidei Chachamim. So he said the two Shidduchim were very, very different. He said it was a product of two different societies. He said, "Where I came from," he said, "you just had to know the home." He said, "That wouldn't have gone very well in America." But in America, he said, "You needed a bit more." Anyway, what did he say in Emes Liakov about marriage? And we find in Vayelech, the mitzvah of Hakel, when it said, the Pasuk says, "Tikro es HaTorah hazos neged kol Yisrael bozneim." Tikro es HaTorah hazos. Mitzvah for the Melech to stand up on Chol HaMoed Sukkos and read HaTorah hazos. What is HaTorah hazos? Rashi says on the Pasuk, based on the Gemara Sota, Mem Aleph, that this is Sefer Devarim, this is Torah Hazos. Why just Sefer Devarim? Why not the whole of the Torah? Take a bit longer, I think on Hashana Rabba you get Bali Kura can do, well, say for Dvarim in what, 25 minutes, so maybe you'll take a whatever. So it would take a bit longer. But why Sefer Dvarim? Seriously, why is Sefer Dvarim more important? So Nehemiah, the Novi Nehemiah, calls Sefer Dvarim Sefer Moshe. Very interesting. Not Sefer Torah Moshe, but Sefer Moshe. This was the Sefer of Moshe himself. And the Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, what does it mean, Sefer Moshe? This was Moshe's own words. Moshe's own words. He spoke Derech Gerono. He was like a Novi, but these were not the words of the Rabbanu Shalom. These were his own words, and he was like a Sofer. He wrote down his Nevuah. Dvarim is the Sefer of Moshe. And the reason why Moshe chose these mitzvahs contained in Sefer Dvarim, because Klal Yisrael were on the threshold of coming into Eretz Yisrael, their aspirations of being a national entity were not just realized at Har Sinai, but were, if you like, consummated when they were now to come into Eretz Yisrael as a people, an independent people. For now, they would make the transition from being individuals to a national entity. There was now a communal agenda more than being just an individual agenda. And therefore, if you look at the content that Moshe chose for Sefer Dvarim, that really informed his choice. What do Klal Yisrael need as a national entity coming to Eretz Yisrael? They need to know the dinim of Malchus. They need to know the dinim of Eretz Yisrael. They need to know the dinim of Mechomo. They need to know the dinim of Shoftim. And this was the selection of Moshe for the communal agenda. So the question is, go to Parshas Kisetse, and for this communal agenda, you will find in Parshas Kisetse, in Yonei Ishus, marriage. What has that got to do with the national agenda? Nisuin, Yibum, Mamzerus. If the selection is based on national agenda, what is in Yonei Ishus and Nisuin doing in a communal agenda? But Rabbi Yaakov said precisely. He says, marriage is a communal agenda. Listen to his words. Avol nira mizeh, she'ein ha'nisuin eitzel b'nei Yisrael, eino inyan proti. If you think that a marriage is a private matter, he says it's not so. Hanogei ali shnei tzedodim, mishpachtam bilvad. If you think that it's just a shidduch between two families, and it's pasandik in ve'agefen, oh no, he says. Every marriage is something that is part of the communal agenda. It is part of the building of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, he says very interestingly, because Yanki was just saying before, that therefore he says, why is it that you have a chosen in shul and you don't say tachnun for the whole kehillah? Because his presence in shul creates a communal
simcha.
And therefore, during Shivas Yimei HaMishter, during the Sheva Brochus week, the whole of the, and pity help the chazan who says Tachnun when you were potter from Tachnun, there'll be an outcry. But he says, what happens if you have an ovel in shul? Do you miss out Tachnun because of Avelus? Avelus is a private matter. For all the fact that we're Menachem Avelim, Amokim Menachem Besoch Shach, yes, we are all joined together to give Tanchumim, but it doesn't make it in the communal agenda. And therefore, he said, when looking at marriage, he said, you know, religious life in Europe, he says, broke down in World War I. He says, not only because of the destruction of Kehillahs, but primarily, he said, what that did to family life in World War I. The breakdown of Yiddishkeit in Europe, they were in World War I because of the breakdown of family life and marriage. And he says, in America, he says, the greatest threat to orthodoxy in America is the breakdown of marriage. marriage is the, if you like, the support and the building blocks of communal agenda. And he quoted Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who said that just as ships passing in the water, in the sea, don't create a path behind them, the waves settle down, everything goes back to normal. He says every marriage is different. He says you can't create a formula for marriage, for all the facts that we have a communal agenda for marriage. But he says in giving a chosen shmuz, yes, he had his principles. So when he gave a chosen shmuz, he said three things to a chosen. He said, first of all, he said you should be constantly aware of the needs of your wife. Constantly, that should be an agenda every day. And then he says, remember, he says that men, I don't know if he talked about Mars and Venus, but what he did say was that men work on the basis of intellect, women are primarily moved by emotion. That's number two. And thirdly, he says, when you get married, it's already, you have to change your grammar, and it's no longer I, but it is we. Very simple. That was his chosen shmuz. But he says every marriage is different. And what he says in his parish, he says when Yoshua was given an extra letter by Moshe, when they went, when the Meraglim went, why? Ko Yoshiach HaMeyatzas Meraglim, Moshe davened for Yoshua. What about Kalev? Why didn't he daven for Kalev? Kalev also needed Siyata Dishmaya. So the difference between Yeshua and Kalev was that Kalev had a wife called Miriam. He didn't need the Siyata Dishmaya that Yeshua needed. Kalev had a wife. The second principle that I want to look at is the title that I gave was the unique Torah of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Everybody's Torah is unique. But his approach was informed by his experience in Slobodka. And particularly the Alter of Slobodka drummed this into his Talmidim, that each one of you must develop your own Derech in Torah. So everybody was Mechadish, their own Chidushim. But Slobodka, in fact, it's very interesting that the shiurim in Slobodka were very, very short. Moshe Mordechai Epstein, his shiur was 30 minutes. I remember when I was zeicher to hear shiurim from Rav Leib Lopion, zeicher tzadik livracha. I think the amount of time that he actually spoke for an hour and a half, maybe was also for only 30 minutes, because he used to speak for a few minutes and then everybody took over, as you probably remember. So he probably also only spoke for a short time. But the reason was, there was a plan behind this, that everybody should develop their own unique approach. Yeah, everybody was encouraged to have their own derech in Torah. And he showed his individuality in breaking away from the standard approach. So for instance, when it wasn't so fashionable, he mastered Tanakh virtually bal peh from a very, very early age. He was very, he homed in on dikduk. And I remember my father, Zichat Tzadik Livrocha, in Manchester Yeshiva in the 30s, he says somebody used to come in and actually give a shiur in dikduk. Can you imagine today how many bochurim would stay for that? Dikduk was a part of the of his approach. And if you look in his parish, there's a lot. I'm sure many people skip over it. It's not so interesting. But he pointed out things like, for instance, he says the word for ayin, he says, is normally feminine, as we say, v'sechazeno einenu b'shuv cholatziyon barachamim. V'sechazeno, it's feminine, loshon lekeva. Why then do you have yiru einenu? Yiru is loshon zocha. He was original in his whole approach, and he was fearless in plotting a very, very interesting path. So for instance, in last week's parsha, hachodesh hazeh lochem, first mitzvah that Rashi says should have started the Torah.
You got something to say? No, you asked the question, there's an answer.
What's the answer?
The name of Haim is...
Pardon? Yeah, I don't know.
There are many words that do both.
Yeah, there are. Yes, of course. There are. Last week said, Chodesh Hazeh Lochem, these are the months. So he pointed out that when Klal Yisrael came back from Bovel, after the Churban Bayis Rishon, they brought with them the names of the months. What language were they? They were Babylonian Aramaic names, including a Loshon of Avodah Zorah. Chodesh Tammuz is a Loshon of Avodah Zorah. He says, surely, he said, they were could be inventive enough to think of, even if they called it Chodesh Rishon, Chodesh Sheni, but why bring even a Loshon of Avodah Zorah? And he says, you find that that's not only the names of the months, but the Loshon HaKodesh was only used for learning Torah. Their vernacular was Aramaic. Why? And the answer that he gives is a very radical answer. He says, there was never meant to be a Bayis Shem. Ribono Shel Olam never originally meant for a Bayis Shem. Bayis Sheni was a temporary solution to a fundamental problem. And the fundamental problem was that just like in Mitzrayim, the Memtes Shari Tuma, descending to the 50th level, this was the Madrega of Klal Yisrael returning to Eretz Yisrael. They were saved at the very, very last moment, but if they'd have stayed any longer, there would have possibly never been Roy for a Geula. And therefore, it was a holding operation. Those almost 500 years of the Bayis Sheni was a holding operation, or in common contemporary phraseology now, it was a booster jab. That's what the Bayis Sheni was. It was a booster jab to keep them going. And there were only meant to be two Bote Mikdosh. And as we find in this coming week's Parsha, in the Shira, Ad Yavor Amcho Hashem, Ad Yavor Amzu Koniso, the Gemara says, these are the two Bote Mikdosh. And what happened to the second one? He says, Shegora Machet, that it was because Mipnei Chatoenu, that's why the second one never lasts, and it was never meant to last. It was a booster. And he says the purpose of the period of the Bayis Sheni was to bed down, if you like, Torah Shebaal Peh in Klal Yisrael. That's what the period was functioned for, so that when they were returned to Golos, they would have Torah Shebaal Peh, which would stand them in good stead for the long Golos of which we are still in. And therefore, this explains several things about the period of the Bayis Sheni. Number one, it explains why there was no Aron HaKodesh, even though the Gemara seems to suggest that they knew exactly where the Aron HaKodesh was under the Harabais, and they could have easily raised a few tiles and dug down, got a few archaeologists and raised it up, but they didn't, knowing that they were not Royu Lekach, and therefore there was no Aron HaKodesh. It also explains why there wasn't an outcry when the Chashmonoim appointed themselves as kings, which the Ramban talks about at length. And that's why the Chashmonoim never survived. But why wasn't there an outcry? And the answer was they didn't want Malchus based off it, because they said, we're not Royov Lekach. And also, he says that's why they retained Aramaic, and that's why they tolerated the names of the months from Bovel, as a reminder that we are going back. We're not here. We're not Royov to stay here. It's a very radical idea, Mechudishtika idea. And also, what's interesting is, he says a similar thing about Moshe and Aaron's plea to Paro that they should go Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar. So the question is, what was this? Was this a tactical move? That there was a Nishkashtoigen, that they weren't going to stay for 3 days, that they were going to ask for 3 days, but then stay longer, or not come back at all? And if you think about that, if they'd have done that, what kind of a Yetzias Mitzrayim would that have been? Would it have been a Kiddush Hashem, or would it have been a Chilul Hashem? He says, no. On the contrary, he says, they meant only 3 days, and we're coming back. And why? Because we've got another 190 years to go of Golus in Mitzrayim. We've had 210. He says, how they knew, how Moshe says, how are they going to be soivel the other 190 years? They need virtually what would be tantamount to a mini Mount HaSinai for 3 days. If you can imagine the uplift that they would have got for 3 days in the Midbar, becoming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that would have been given them the strength, the moral and spiritual strength to be able to withstand another 190 years. And that was a real tactic. It wasn't a tactic. And therefore, what's interesting is, what was his attitude to the present state of Israel? How did he look at the rise of the Medina? And what he says is in exactly the same mode. He says, after our churban that we have suffered in our age, and the yush that has caused, what state would Klal Yisrael have been if we'd have gone from the camps to nothing? Back to Germany, back to Europe, back to all the countries that we came from. Where would Klal Yisrael have been? He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a Medina. That's what he said. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a Medina as a holding operation. He says, to save Soviet Jewry and to strengthen Jewish identity and to make a link with the diaspora. That's what he said. That Medina Yisrael is the Bayis Sheni of our time. Remarkable thing. What, finally, let me talk about, I mentioned originally, it came to me this picture that we have in the sukkah of Talmidei Chachamim sitting around a table. Many of them lived at different times, and it's obviously a device of the artist. And you think to yourself, if I were to interpose myself into this picture, who would I like to sit next to? Who would be great company? And if I could say such a thing, not Chasson, you should be zeicher to sit next to anybody, but of all of them, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, I'm sure, you'd never be lost for conversation, because he was the most humane and human individual who related to everybody, and that was the mark of his gadlus. And the greatest simon of this was the way that he related to children. He, first of all, he had absolutely no ego whatsoever. So as a Rosh Hashiva, somebody once found him sprawling under a car on his hands and knees. When he was Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vadas, he was sprawling under a car, and the reason was a kid had kicked his football under the car and couldn't get it. So he, Bichvodo Vatsmo, sprawled under the car to retrieve the ball. And another once when he retired in his last years, he retired quite early, the age of about 65. As a Rosh Hashiva in the Torah Vadas, and he went to Monsi, which were probably his most productive years, because there he wasn't just a Rosh Hashiva to a yeshiva, but he became a Rosh Hashiva to virtually the whole world. And there he saw a kid playing yo-yo. So he sat down with the kid and he said, can you teach me how to do this? It looks very, very interesting. And can you imagine what that did for that boy? His memories of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Yes, many of them asked him shyly, but to play yo-yo with the Rosh Hashiva, you'll never forget that. Anyway, he didn't know. He had a wonderful quote. He says, "I don't know whether children help you live longer, but they certainly help you live younger." He says, "It keeps me young to relate to children." And his approach to chinuch was very interesting. He says, you have to look what is best for each child. Of course, Chanuch Lenar Al Pi Darko, but in last week's Parsha, or 2 weeks, a few weeks ago, when Miriam called Yocheved to nurse Moshe Rabbeinu, and she said to Bas Paro, V'korosi loch isho meinekes min hoivriyos. Okay, so Rashi says, Bas Paro acceded to this because there was no alternative. Because Moshe, they tried to bring all mitzrios to feed Moshe, but he'd refused. Why? Says the Loshen is shohaya osid ledaber im hashchina, because Moshe's mouth was not appropriate to feed from any mitzvah. So what's interesting is, what bearing does this have on halacha? So is it mutter for a wet nurse to provide a wet nurse for a Jewish child? And the answer is basically, min hadin, yes. That cholav Akum or Cholov Mitzria is no different from Cholov Yisraelis. Minadin. But the Ramon paskens that no, you shouldn't. Why? Because it is Metamtimus Halev. That milk is a tainted milk and it has a Roshim, or it leaves a Roshim on the Neshama. So the Rashbo brings this as a makar, brings this pasuk as a makar. Why do we not allow a child to feed from a non-Jewish wet nurse? Because of this makar with Moshe Rabbeinu, shoya osid ledaber imashchina. But that was Moshe. Moshe, we know, was osid ledaber imashchina. Every little child is osid ledaber imashchina. Said Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, yes. He says, when you look into that child's eyes, you should say that I'm going to bring up my child with the aspiration she'osid ledaber im hashchinah. So what a beautiful idea, that every child could be a potential Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore, he says, that has a bearing on halacha. And he was very, very strong in the importance of in choosing the right environment for chinuch of a child. He says, he points to when Yaakov gave a bracha, Yisimcha Elokim, Kefrayim v'chim Menashe, as the question is asked, the one downfall of the family had been through favoritism, sibling favoritism, right? With Yosef ended up in Mitzrayim because of seeming jealousy. And now Yaakov is replicating the same problem, Ephraim and Menashe over Kiruvin b'Shimon. And what about the other brothers? Why not jealousy? Says Rabbi Yaakov, because they would have understood why Yaakov picked out Ephraim and Menashe. It wouldn't have caused any jealousy. They realized that Ephraim and Menashe needed special protection. Why? Because they were the only two grandchildren who had grown up in an environment, in a sviva, which was dangerous. And they'd survived, and they needed extra siyata dishmaya. And therefore, what's interesting is, of the two, Ephraim and Menashe, Ephraim needed more protection than Menashe. Why? Because he had grown up longer, and also his very name indicated how much he'd absorbed from Egyptian environment. Ephraim, the pay and the resh recurs very interestingly in a lot of names. Paro, pay resh. Ephraim, pay resh. Shifra and Puah, Shifra, pay resh. Where's this pay resh? Pay resh indicates absorbing the environment of Mitzrayim. That you were tainted by the environment. And therefore, in a remark, and Potiphar is the same thing. He says, a remarkable psychological insight, he says, that's why, who were the ones who jumped the gun and were trying to get out from Mitzrayim, the Ma'apid, 30 years before the Gula? Ephraim. Why Ephraim? Because Ephraim, more than anybody else, they were absorbed in the environment of Mitzrayim, and they couldn't stomach the fact that their former friends, their former neighbors, we're all Mitzrayim together, their former neighbors turned into taskmasters. Right? As history is, as we know in our own times, repeated itself. People couldn't believe in Egypt that their former neighbors and throughout Europe turned into taskmasters. And therefore, I'll finish by saying how his personal example was so attuned to the environment. And it's simple things which we practice. You know, when we, as let's say, as grandparents, you're invited into your children's home. And what happens? Your son-in-law says to you, no, you make a motzi, you sit at the front. Okay? And some of us feel we can, some of us feel it's inappropriate. He would never do it. He says, when I come into the home, he says, the home is the environment of the children. It's the environment of chinuch. And therefore, they have to see their father as head of the home. Because psychologically, he says, I'm one step removed. I'm not in charge. He wouldn't do it. And therefore, he also He tried at all costs to keep children at home for as long as possible. When sending to yeshiva or to sem, he said, keep them at home as long, unless it's impossible. And I'll just end with one thing. There's two words, he says, for creating an environment for a child. You can be a mechanach and you can be a mashpia. He says, what's the difference between a mechanach and a mashpia? He says, one should try at all costs. A parent has to be more than a mechanach. You have to be a mashpia. A mechanach is something that you feed. It's like drip feeding into a child directly. It's intravenous feeding. You feed into the veins. You go as a mechanach in a school or a rebbe, in a yeshiva, drip feeds Torah into the child. A mashpia, it comes from the word shipua, which is an incline. And in incline, water flows imperceptibly. He says, the task of a parent in a home is to create an environment, not just of chinuch, but of be a mashpia. So the child imbibes Torah imperceptibly, just from looking at the example of the parent, and he says that is the greatest chinuch that you can possibly have. It's drip feeding, but through imperceptible water just flowing into the veins of the child, Be'er Mayim Chaim, he says it's imperceptible, and keep your children at home as long as possible. Make sure that the parents are paramount in the home, he says, and that is the best chinuch that you can have for your child.
Good.